listeners. This here be the Once Upon a Time Fan Podcast. This be an unofficial podcast dedicated to the hit ABC TV show Once Upon a Time. This be the first thoughts episode where we give our first thoughts of the amazing Once Upon a Time episode we just be a watching. Well, I was watching with me good eye, so I'll do the best I can. And now we be sailing for Once Upon a Time treasure, so climb aboard. Here is our captain and first mate of the Once Upon a Time fan podcast. Captain, permission to come aboard?
Permission granted.
Yes.
Come aboard, all ye. Come aboard, landlubbers and mateys alike. Still kind of music's loud.
A little bit.
We're still kind of working the tweaks out of things. There we go. That's better.
That's a bit better.
All right. So we have just watched The Heart of the Truest Believer.
Yes.
And that's really what the episode was about.
Mm-hmm.
So many cool things.
Yeah. It was a good episode.
We're going to jump right into it.
Yes.
So they answered a whole bunch of questions, and they love you. The producers just love you like no one's business. We'll get to that in a little bit. I did have a little teaser because I want to start doing this. We're going to talk about the Home Office.
Yes, we will.
We're going to talk about Jaws. You have to remind me because I didn't write it down.
Okay.
We're going to talk about The Wizard of Oz.
All right.
We're going to talk about fireballs,
mm-hmm.
cannonballs,
mm-hmm.
and the Bourne Once Upon a Tynum. We're going to talk about that. So it was so cool. And so I don't think you noticed everything about the opening scene that I did.
Well, we'll see if we did or didn't.
So we saw the moment that Henry was born.
Yes. 11 years ago.
11 years ago. And it was in prison.
Well, it was in a hospital, but the Department of Corrections officer was standing next to.
Yep.
And it was at 8:14, 8:15.
Yep.
It went from 8:14. Yeah, 8:15 is when he was born.
So that's another kind of an interesting little twist. Mm-hmm. All these things happened at 8:15. It was a very important time.
Those are important numbers.
Yep. And you may have not noticed this as well, but did you notice that the moment Henry was born, something happened?
Oh, absolutely. I did notice that, actually. I noticed, and sorry for my scratchy voice. We cheered at a football game last night, so I'm a little hoarse. I did notice that the lights and things flickered. There was a definite flash of something, and you could tell that was, you know, it was an important thing. Now, they probably all didn't realize it and just thought it was some, you know, coincidence of whatever, but we all know that's because Henry was born.
When was the last time that happened?
Well,
that there was an electrical surge.
Well, there've been a couple of them, actually, I guess.
When Emma arrived in Storybrooke and put her foot down on the street, there was that spark coming off the electrical wire, phone wire or something.
Right.
Anyway, I just, you know, I noticed that. Mm-hmm. So.
No, I did too.
It was a very cool moment, mm-hmm. and of course, we don't really know the rest of the story. There was a discussion, and I think one of the most telling things was, and there's a thread that we're going to go through the episode. She says, I can't be a mother.
That's when he wanted to give the baby to her, the doctor. She says, no, I'm not a mother. I can't be a mother.
Yep.
Yeah.
So identity, who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Was one of those threads that we'll keep kind of going back to through the episode.
Right.
So the
Ship.
Right.
With all Motley Crue on it.
Yeah, I was just looking at notes in Journey to Neverland. The producer said Peter Pan is the Home Office. And that's not necessarily true. Kind of, sort of. We'll get there.
All
anyway, so I wrote that down. Mm-hmm. But I put a star next to Can't Be a Mother because it was...
Right.
Yeah. So the... And Henry, it was interesting. He Henry has a way of really kind of laying all things out. He goes, my mom's coming,
mm-hmm.
you know, to Greg and Tamara, both
right.
of them.
Right.
So, you know.
Well, because, look, Henry recognizes that, you know, Regina's not his birth mother, but she raised him.
Sure.
You know, and she may be the evil queen, but she still raised him. She still wanted him, and I think he recognizes that.
It's still the whole idea about who's the real mother, the birth mother or adoptive mother. It still causes a lot of passionate discussion, and I hope that we can kind of... I think the more they work together, that maybe that'll kind of...
Well, I think the fact is that Henry said both of them. He recognizes that, you know, neither one is more important than the other. They're both equally important to him.
Yep. The thing that...
before he knew who Regina was, he loved her as
absolutely.
His mother. So, you know, that doesn't change. That's...
He loves them both. He loves both
right.
his moms.
Right.
So.
Exactly. Yep. You know, so...
I'm going to tread lightly here. But it is interesting that Greg and Tamar represented these believers.
Mm-hmm.
And that term really has a lot of meaning in certain
sure.
circles. And they said, we don't ask questions. We just believe in our cause.
Right.
And anyway,
yeah,
that really wasn't the best approach to not ask questions and just to blindly believe. In certain instances... That we'll see later,
right.
belief is good. And it does lead to taking a leap of faith, which Rumpelstiltskin actually said.
Right, he did.
Later on, he was talking to Emma about mm-hmm, that. But mm-hmm.
Well, I think the thing is with Greg and Tamara, I don't know Tamara's story so much. We don't know too much about that.
I don't know that it's necessary now.
Well, I don't think so either. But but for Greg, we do know his backstory. And we know that he was, you know, little boy Owen. And... I think that the key to belief is there's, you know, the phrase childlike belief. And if you think about it, that's going to be a huge theme, I think, this year is childlike belief. Well, what do children believe? Children will believe anything you tell them. And they'll believe in things that aren't real.
Yeah, Santa, Easter Bunny.
Absolutely.
An honest lawyer.
I don't think they think about lawyers, but...
I know.
But they, you know, they do have this, you know, unfettered, inhibited belief and faith that something is real or what have you. And they believe in things that don't exist, fairies, dragons, you know, things that, you know, adults usually say, oh no, that's just make believe. Kids believe. Kids will see things that, you know, adults don't. That's why, like I said, I think this is going to be a big theme throughout this whole year is belief, childlike belief. And I know they keep saying believe, but I think if you really look at it, especially considering where they are right now, Neverland, which is
right.
where Peter Pan and the Lost Boys never grew up, I think you're going to find that that's going to be the core of this whole season.
Well, that's what I mentioned in the previous kind of wrap-up show is that I think that this island is going to cause them to go down to this core of who they were as children and become
mm-hmm.
children and
childlike, yeah.
Childlike mm-hmm. belief, that kind of a thing. And I think we saw a little peek of that tonight.
We did.
So really quick, Hook mentioned that he tried to escape from Neverland a number of times.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wonder how he eventually escaped.
Right.
Did he make a deal with Pan? I don't know. So
it'd be interesting to see that backstory, actually. I hope they show it to us at some point.
Because Felix and his crew
mm-hmm.
didn't attack and or grab Hook and
mm-hmm.
his crew
mm-hmm.
and drag him to the island.
Right. They weren't interested, though.
Yeah, right.
But think about it, because the whole goal was a boy, right?
Right.
And again, not to jump ahead, but the whole point of this whole episode had to do with childlike belief.
Right.
So when you think about that, that's why they didn't grab Hook. They didn't grab his crew, because they're adults. That's a core theme of Peter Pan anyway, is the adults don't seem to believe, they don't seem to understand, they're missing a lot. They're jaded, and it's true. As adults, we are jaded. I mean, I think we see things, and we go, oh, yeah, that's not feasible.
Right,
and
sure.
And we forget
mm-hmm. yep.
to think about how would a kid look at things.
Yep. So. Yeah, we used to believe in yeah, yep, got
yeah.
it. So a number of times...
I'm sorry. By the way, that kid who plays Felix...
Mm-hmm.
really good actor.
He is a great actor.
He's really good.
And I remember watching the scene that we'll talk about. We'll talk about it later. Yeah. At D23.
Right.
That was one of the locks for me. I looked at that.
Mine
and went,
too.
Okay.
Mine too.
Okay. Now we have an emotional connection.
Yeah.
And anyway,
because so, I will say that season two left me a little wanting, and I was a little disappointed.
We gotta
with
let it
a lot
go.
Of, I know, yeah. but no. What I'm saying is, yeah. when I saw that at D23, yeah. and from the things that I heard from Eddie and Adam, I was absolutely just okay. You know, my faith is renewed. I'm starting to feel that childlike belief now.
Yep.
So
yep.
I'm really grateful to them for coming back to what you know we felt we were missing.
I mentioned the word reboot, and I really kind of feel it now that they've kind of rebooted things a little bit and kind of got back to what they were,
yep.
I think. So a number of characters are going to be tested and tested on who they are, their identity, that kind of a mm-hmm. thing. The first exchange was between Rumpelstiltskin and Emma.
Mm-hmm.
He really took her to task.
Yeah, he did.
He said, you know, basically, you don't believe.
You're not going to be able to do this. That's why I have to go save him, because you don't have the belief. You didn't believe in the first place. And
you don't believe
because,
in magic.
Right.
You don't, yeah.
Now, here's the interesting thing. Let's all think back. You know, Rumpelstiltskin, we know how he operates. He operates on deals. He also operates on manipulating. Do you honestly think that he really doesn't believe she has the belief system to do this? I don't. I think he was trying to goad her and mm-hmm. to kind of put the fire in her belly to go get him. Because it's not enough to say, I want to go get my son. She needs, with Emma, she really needs that extra, I'm going to prove you wrong kind of a thing.
Yep.
And I think that's what he knows that. He knows her. Well, I mean, he even said it. I know you well enough to know, and you didn't believe in blah, blah, blah. And so it's not going to be enough. You're not going to succeed. That's why I'm going to go get him. And, you know, he had to dig at her and say, all you are is just a bail bonds person,
yep.
which actually I think was a dig and a reminder at where she came from, so to speak, that she knows kind of there's more to that story, I think, than we're seeing. But how she got to that point and the fact that she was that and that's when Henry found her, I think that's a little, you know, that was his. Like I said, fire in her belly.
Yep.
So.
Well, I'm going to take a jaunt and we'll come back. They now call, instead of storybook or whatever characters, they call them legends.
Right, legends.
They refer to the characters as legends now.
Yeah.
So now we've kind of broadened it out. We open it out. You know, we have Robin Hood and different.
I liked him.
Legendary characters. So, but yeah, I think
Robin Hood was also a book too, by the way.
Right, I know, but
kind of a little
it's
bit.
Not,
yeah.
It's not. It's not storybook characters,
magical.
Fairy tale yeah. books anymore.
Yeah.
We've known that for a while, but anyway, they okay, legends, fine.
Yeah, right. Works.
So, a number of characters have been challenged, and I forgot the initial one, actually, but I mean, I'm glad we talked about Rumpel mm-hmm. and Emma.
Yeah.
Because I think that was important as mm-hmm. the show. Because remember, we started, she said, I'm not a mother. And then Rumpel kind of really gave her a nudge again and said, you're just a bail bonds person. You're not a... I'm going to go get Henry. You can't even do that.
Right.
Because you're going to have more belief than you have, and you don't have any. So I'll go. That was another.
Well, I love the fact she says, yeah, I killed the dragon. I pretty much believe.
Right, right. But he had a lot of points, too.
He had a point. But that's what. But I think that's funny is that he wanted to. I think he did that. Again, like I said, he was goading her.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think he wanted to prepare her mentally for what she was about to come up against. Because in reality, she had trouble with magic. What's she going to do with Peter Pan? Who is not. A grown-up. He's not going to have rational mm-hmm. grown-up thoughts. He's a kid.
Yep.
And he's going to behave like a kid. So I think this was him preparing her for what's coming with Peter, because he's going to be an interesting foe, and she's going to have to dig into the whole belief system in order to handle again. And this will tie in with kind of my theory of what's happening with the season that I'll talk about later when we get to that point. The other thing is that I think he was also pointing out to her, going, look, you killed a dragon. Yeah, so what?
Right.
That's great, but you're going to need more than that. So
The first real kind of challenge came from Emma to her parents.
Mm-hmm.
Because she said, I blame you for all of this.
Right.
She's kind of alluded to that.
Yeah.
She's always kind of, she's embraced them as her parents, but she's always been kind of, I'm warming up to it. Don't push me. Don't whatever.
It's got to be your own time.
You know, and now she's really laying it out. Say, look, I blame you for all this, you know.
Right.
And the Charmings are tested. Their belief and their hope, you know, are being really challenged.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because she goes, you know, no, we believe that. And then Emma says, why? You know, all this trouble, all this problem, and you just kind of live in this belief, you know. And a little bit of, I think each in their own way. I mean, later on, Regina basically kind of said the same thing to Snow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your unicorn Snickers, Snickers, your unicorn stickers, what are they going to do now? This is Neverland.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just interesting to see all their kind of core of who they are, mm-hmm. are really being tested by each other.
Right.
And we'll talk more about that in a little bit. But,
well,
yeah.
And that was the other thing is, you know, I mean, Emma made a really good point. She said something to her parents, which I thought was really interesting. On the one hand, she has a point, but on the other, she's missing a big point, a big part of it. We're the same age. We have the same set of experiences. We have the same level of experience. No, actually you don't, because they may be the same age as you, but they were frozen that way for 28 years.
Right.
And they lived in the real world and they've had a lot more experiences than you have. And I know she was, you know, frustrated at that point and angry. And, you know, she was blaming herself that, you know, Henry was taken and that Neil was killed in her, you know, 'cause she doesn't know. I know she still blames herself for that but that's, I think, what she needs to, again, fuel that fire to be able to rescue them.
Rumpel mentioned a leap of faith,
mm-hmm.
and to Emma, you have never taken a leap of faith.
Right.
And, who else said that to Emma, actually?
Mm.
It was August.
I was going to say,
August said, you've never taken a leap of faith. So it's interesting that all these people that really surround Emma just continue to kind of kick the puck back into play and just kind of keep her going toward that thing. So in actuality, she's killed a dragon.
Mm-hmm.
She's kissed her son with a loving mother kiss, broken curses and different things, assisted Regina in, you know, turning back the destruction of everyone in Storybrooke, and she still really doesn't believe.
Not completely.
And you know, and Rumpel will go through it. You know, reminds me of you know, some stories about people knowing everyone's faults and lining them out. So, so Rumpel can spin a cane and disappear. It's kind of an interesting trick with his magical cane.
Well, I thought it was real interesting is when he comes up on deck and he's in his crocodile skin suit and hook goes, I didn't realize we had time for a wardrobe change.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I thought that was really funny. I really loved Hook. I mean, I love Hook anyway. I just think he's just very yummy. But he was especially wonderful and funny tonight. He made me laugh. I liked the softer side of Hook.
So Felix is the welcomer, I guess. So Felix kind of pops in and welcomes people to Neverland.
He seems to be kind of the, think of him as like a chief security officer, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, he kind of seems to be the general of the army, the Lost Boy Army.
Mm-hmm. So we see Pan, or the soul shadow of Pan. Or some kind of soul shadow.
It looks like it's the soul or, yeah. So, and I started thinking about this. I'm like, okay, what's the deal with shadows? Well, shadows are cast, they're hidden from the light, but they need the light source to exist, right? Shadows don't exist in total darkness.
Right.
So there has to be some sort of light in order for them to exist. So if that is in fact Peter's shadow, and it exists because there's some light, then there is some good in him somewhere.
Mm.
Right?
Yep.
Everybody has a shadow.
Right.
That means there's everybody has a dark side. But then again, in order for the shadow to exist, you have to have the light. And the only way the shadow is destroyed is light envelops it and overcomes it.
True.
So,
yep.
Whatever that is, and it again, based on the way it looks like it's the soul or the dark side of a character or person.
Well, so the soul's shadow, the Ripper, rips souls out like Regina and Cora and Rumpelstiltskin.
Mm-hmm.
And Hook sometimes with this enchanted hook.
Right.
Rips out hearts from people.
Difference being is that it looks like it's an instantaneous thing. However, is that really... I mean, is Greg dead? It looked like he was.
Right.
We didn't see what happened to him afterwards. He just was basically a body on the beach. So we don't know if that killed him or if it put him into like a trance-like state. We don't know.
Well, this is what we hope happened to Greg. That's what I hope. That's what I hope.
Well,
we'll
and
see.
I was really kind of fascinated by the fact that the shadow took only his shadow, his soul.
Right.
And if that's the case, is that because it can only take one at a time? It can't take more than one? In other
Possibly.
Words, it can't carry two, it can't handle two?
Yeah, and I wonder if they're like the heart vault. I wonder if there's like a soul cave or something where these caves are kept. So,
you mean these souls are kept?
Yeah.
And then Tamara got shot in the back with an arrow. And I actually gave a little woohoo. Because remember, I think I said this at least maybe once or twice. Maybe. I don't know if I did or not. I didn't like Tamara.
I know. I
don't like her.
The Twitter world at large kind of knows that, too. No, listen. I can't play the sound yet because we haven't talked about that yet.
Okay, well, that's fine.
So,
don't worry about it.
So Neil's sword, I don't know what is magical about Neil's sword, but for sure Hook wanted to give that to Emma.
He did. I don't know that there's anything magical about it, but I think that it, again, is a way to fuel Emma's fire.
Mm.
Hook's a pretty wise character, despite his, you know, sometimes misguided attitudes and lust for revenge. He actually is pretty smart. And I see him as kind of the replacement August this season.
Yeah.
He's got some words of wisdom. And I think that more than anything, I think he actually does care about Emma.
Well,
I don't know if he's in love with her. I don't think he's quite in love with her. I think he's still in love with Mila. But I think that he cares enough about Emma and sees her as a friend. And he did allude to that later on. He was kind of being saucy when he said it. But I think he really does actually like Emma and wants to be friends with her. And again, I think part of that is because he looked at Bay as an adoptive son. And since Emma is Bay's love, then he looks at her as kind of almost like a daughter. So I think what it was he was saying, I know how much Neil meant to you, or Bay meant to you, and here's what I have of his. She even said, what do you all, I didn't realize you were so sentimental. He goes, I'm not, I just figured you'd want to have it. I think he really is sentimental. I think he really did, you know, care for Bay as a son. I think he saw an opportunity to kind of, you know, keep Mila with him always. And when Bay left of his own free will, basically, or was taken by Pan, that was when it was, I think that's when he kind of got his angry back on again.
So we went back to the Aurora's kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess there's no horses to go to Rumpelstiltskin's large estate.
Well, there may not be, because who knows what happened to them. I mean, there's still crazy beasts roaming in the Enchanted Forest.
Yep. So cannonballs. So Charming manned the cannon. and he was going to take out some mermaids that were causing some trouble for the boat. And I love that Cannonball switched to fireballs, and Regina had learned the fireball trick that Rumple taught her.
Right.
And so used that to scare away the mermaids. So,
except the one they caught.
Yeah. And so let's talk about the pixie dust that Peter Pan
had.
Wow,
we were just skipping over all kinds of stuff.
I just wrote it down.
Okay.
So, did Peter Pan lie about not believing, or did he actually not believe?
No, I think he lied about it.
Okay.
Look.
Oh, because that's what Henry said at the end. He goes, "You lied."
Exactly.
So, the Echo Cave, I don't know what to think about that. They just brought it up. We have to go to the Echo Cave. It may have been nothing.
I think that it's either a big fat lie to get Henry to go. And again, it's funny because here Henry accuses Greg and Tamara of not asking questions and not finding stuff out, figuring out what's going on before he, you know, follows blindly into what's going on. And then he asked questions and he got lied to, but he believed it. He didn't question why do you only have a little bit of this? And, you know, if it didn't work the first time, why'd you keep it?
Right.
Kind of a thing. I mean, he didn't get in his suspicious mode with the boy. He didn't ask him his name. I mean, didn't tell him his name, didn't ask him his name. Kind of, that's an unusual situation.
Mm-hmm.
So here Henry accuses Greg and Tamara of being stupid for not asking questions. And then he turns around and doesn't ask the questions he should have asked up front. And that's how he ends up. So
it's interesting. I just kind of jotted down some notes. Neil said portals take you where you think of.
Right.
And that's not been true, maybe to him, because we've always known that it takes a bean.
Right.
You know, or a hat.
Right.
And it takes some type of a compass. So there's a couple of things that are needed for a portal. But I guess we're kind of evolving into this whole portal knowledge, and now it's just you have to think of, and again, it's probably a tip off to Peter Pan. Think of a happy thought. Think of a any happy little thought. So,
right.
Yeah.
Well, and that's a possibility. And the other thing is if you think about it, you know, in your mind, if you've got a happy place or if you've got something that you think of, that in of itself could be considered a compass. Think
right.
about.
Okay.
Let's go. Let's kind of go with our theme of our show, Pirates of the Caribbean, Johnny Depp, Captain Jack's compass. You know, they always said it didn't work.
Right.
It'll show you what your heart's desire is. So I think it's kind of a similar thing. I mean, it's, you know, the compass doesn't point you to the actual location. It'll point you to what you think, you know, what you really want. And maybe that's the thing is that, you know, granted the compass to get to someplace that's never been, you know, gotten to before, has no magic. I don't know. Think about it. The bean that opened the portal when Bay fell through the first time, where did it take him?
Mm-hmm.
It didn't take him to our world.
Right.
Dropped him into Neverland, essentially.
Yeah. So, and also Mulan kind of helped us a little bit and said, well, don't think of a place, think of a person.
No, it wasn't. Was it Mulan?
Yep.
I thought it was Aurora that said
because
that.
Because the crystal ball later on.
Mm, yeah.
You know, he said, I'm thinking of a place and it's not there. Well, think, and she said, think of a person.
Right.
And think of her. So, so initially I didn't think Rumple liked Colleen because he made the arrow disappear, and then Tomorrow kind of had some more breath to talk, and then
and what was interesting is here she is. She, do you find this interesting like I did? She is so against magic. She wants to eradicate it.
Right.
But she was so willing to let him perform magic on her to let her live.
Yep. And Colleen was so mad when the arrow disappeared, she did this. Colleen was angry. She was really, really angry.
I was a tad unhappy.
But then,
oh, man.
But then the producers really liked Colleen.
Yeah.
And then Rumpel pulled out her heart, and then we could play this for tomorrow. Tomorrow's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Rest in peace, Tamara.
Yeah.
And Greg, unless they find some way to put the shadow back or something. So, anyway, I won't read the joke about she didn't have the heart to live anymore. I won't read that joke.
Okay, please don't. Right.
So I believe we meet the Little Mermaid. Mm-hmm. I believe... That wasn't a Little Mermaid on the boat?
No.
Okay.
It wasn't her.
It was a mermaid.
It was a mermaid.
That had a conch shell.
Right.
That sounded some type of a warning.
Right.
And so which caused a storm.
But did it really?
Well, yeah.
I mean, think about it.
Let's get to that. So my born once upon a Tynum thing was this. Remember when they're running through the forest? That's what it reminded me of. All those quick chase scenes in the forest.
Yeah.
It's like Bourne Ultimatum. Oh, well.
Oh.
It's a location joke. You had to be there.
I guess so, because, I didn't catch that.
Well, but I was thinking about it. If I would have trusted anybody in that situation with the storm, it mm-hmm. would have been Regina. I mean, Hook, yes. Hook's been in a lot of storms, mm-hmm. but he was in over his head.
Well, he was. But what was interesting is that what I thought of, and you know what I honestly thought of when that whole scene was taking place, where Regina and Snow are yelling at each other, and then Hook and Charming are kind of going at each other's throat, literally. I thought of the movie Mystery Men.
Oh, okay.
And one of the weapons was, that was a great movie, by the way. It was very funny. And Jeffrey Rush, who was pirate, was in that. That there was a weapon, and I can't remember, the blame thrower.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of go, blame thrower. And it was constantly where you'd point it at somebody, and then they'd start fighting.
Yeah.
And it just kind of felt like the storm. And at first I thought the storm is causing the fighting. But then Emma was right and said, no, we're causing the storm.
Yeah.
And I'm sure if we go back and look at that again, that storm came up because the first insult was thrown.
Yeah. I actually, my mind went back to the story of Jonah on the boat.
That too.
So, anyway.
But yeah, no, what I'm saying is the storm, when she blew the shell, there was no storm coming. They kept saying, what did you do? What did you do? And then it was only, the storm only came after they started throwing insults at each other.
Yeah.
So that's hilarious. And then Emma had to go and jump off the side of the ship to get their attention. That was pretty bad.
Yep. The thing I was interested in is, you know, Charming took the sword, was mm-hmm. going to kill the mermaid,
yeah.
and then Regina kind of tested him. Let's do this. Let's fillet the bitch. That's what she said.
She
I'm
did. She did, absolutely.
Her.
No, I know.
And there was a knowing look from Emma and from Snow to him like, no, don't do this. I mean,
well, and I think what it was I think there was a part of them that were thinking if it'll stop this, definitely do it. But then they realized that was not the right thing to do. Because, I mean, if you think about it, their emotions are running high anyway. I thought it was very, very interesting that, you know, Regina did say, now we're talking Charming. I thought it was really interesting that she recognized in him that he has, and again, it comes back to what I said earlier, there's a dark side in everybody.
Right, right.
So Charming does have that dark side. He just doesn't allow it to take over. And that's the difference. I think that's the difference between the Charmings and Regina. Regina gave in and and succumb to her dark side, whereas the Charmings, they get tested to it and they get pushed to that point, but they never let it actually take over.
But she was pushed by Cora and Rumpelstiltskin.
Absolutely she was. Oh, no, so, I agree. I totally agree. She was. But what I'm saying is she didn't fight it. She didn't feel like she had any reason to fight that. So she allowed it to kind of, you know, take over. It was easier to take, you know, to give into that.
Well, let's say this. I think all of their options were good options. Regina's was different. And that's, you know, what I'll say. When she turned the mermaid, I didn't know if it was into bronze.
It was kind of hard to tell. But, it looked like it was bronze.
But I love the writers
something.
When they go, you know, Jeff's not going to know. So we need to say later, you turned her into wood.
Yeah.
So let's do that so Jeff knows. And I'm thankful. Thank you so much, writers of the episode. But yeah, that really kind of started the whole thing. I would have been interested to know if they threw the mermaid back overboard, would that have stopped everything?
And I don't know if it would have or not. What I think would have happened is I still think it wouldn't have made a difference, because I don't know if you noticed it, but when they started going into the waves, the mermaid wasn't on the deck anymore. The wood statue was not there anymore, which was interesting because if you actually look at pirates, if you look at their the bow of their ships, a lot of them have mermaids carved in the bows of
their
ships.
Yeah, right.
So
maybe it's kind of saying, okay, yeah, we know you're there. We represent. Leave us alone.
Possibly.
Please don't.
I'm just,
us.
Yeah.
So let's talk quickly about Niels Kane. You know, I think it's one of those things in a lot of homes with children is there's a kitchen doorway and they mark how tall the kids are, and they put little names next to it and all that. Well, Rumpel had a cane,
right?
It appears.
Walking staff, yeah.
Walking stick that had magical powers if it was wielded by Rumpelstiltskin or by his kin. In this case, it was Neil. Mm-hmm. And so it was another one of those thematic things where a secret door, you know, not put the candle back, but I mean, there was a secret door in his estate that led to more secrets. And it was actually kind of like his shop in that in the front of the shop, there's really cool stuff. But in the back part of the shop, man, there was really cool stuff.
Yeah.
Talisman and a double-sided candle and all kinds of stuff that wasn't in the front. You wouldn't want to leave it out there.
No.
Unless it was Bay's shawl, and that was in the
Locked away.
That
was locked away. Yeah. I thought it was really cool the way he did kind of a twirly, whirly, almost martial arts kind of a thing with it. So I don't know if Michael James Raymond. I always get it wrong.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Bay, Neil. I don't know if he's familiar with martial arts or not, but he was very fluid and very graceful. I thought that was kind of cool. I liked Robin Hood, too, by the way. We kind of glossed over Robin Hood a little bit. The fact that he was there in the house, the fact that I thought it was real. Bay's really smart. He learned a lot of stuff while he was away from. I'm sure he learned a lot from Rumpel himself, but he learned a lot too while he was away. And the fact that he, you know, saw that there was a goblet and that it was fresh, you know, liquid in there, and I'm guessing wine because water, you know, I don't think he would have been able to taste if it had been bad or not, if it had been old. But the fact that he smelled it and tasted it and knew that somebody was there, and then, whew, there's the arrow. And so Robin Hood, I thought it was really cool that he, you know, explained that that Rumpel spared his life.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So that'll be an interesting story to see how that plays itself out.
Well, yeah, but we saw that.
We did?
Yeah. Robin Hood had a sick, his wife was sick. And so there was an exchange there.
Hmm.
It was in season two.
Wow. Yep. I apparently had pushed that out of my head, so.
Okay. Well, we'll revisit that. But yeah, there was.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, anyway.
Yep. So.
It was nice to see him again then.
Yeah. I'm gonna put on my Dr. Phil hat because, you know, it's interesting. If you listen to the official Once Upon a Time podcast, they really don't talk about oh, there was three candlesticks in the back, and there's a little number in the thing. And they don't really talk about it. They talk about the themes of the episodes. And the one that really kind of jumped out to me is attitudes of the people on the ship affected nature.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was thinking, well, attitudes affect your world. They can change your world. Your attitude can be good, and your world can be good, or your attitude can be bad, and it's just as bad as you project.
Right.
And they really showed that clearly, you know, because Emma had to jump off the ship and put herself in peril, and they all kind of snapped out of it and said, we need to save Emma, and they all worked together like on Jaws. It was very interesting to put all these people on this boat together.
Right.
And until they had a shared common goal, on Jaws it was to find the shark. On this ship it was to help Emma, rescue Emma.
Mm-hmm.
And when they broke out of their fighting and all this kind of stuff, you know, I'm sure certain people enjoyed to see Snow hit Regina and then Regina to hit Snow and, you know, all these people, you know. But when they really started working together to rescue Emma, that was, I really noticed Hook kind of, his caring for her really kind of took over. It's like, no, you're not going, I'm going. You know?
Well, and it was, no, here, time off.
Right.
I mean, the fact that they all did work together and the fact that they, you know, put aside their differences for the common goal was, it was really cool to watch.
And I love the, to me, it was kind of tip of the hat to Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade when Henry and this helper person ran to the edge of this cliff, and they couldn't make it across, and they knew the other lost. Smee called them lost ones, but they called them lost boys. So I'll lean to ones because I think haven't heard the story of maybe there's lost girls too.
Maybe.
Possibly. So anyhow, but they hit this cliff and they're just stuck. They don't know what to do. They can't really jump down. It's too far and they can't jump across. And then Henry understands that if you believe and have the pixie dust, then you can get over. And then we see this really cool Last Crusade moment of jumping out into nothing or running into nothing, having this belief. And in this case, pixie dust, you fly over.
Right.
And it was really neat. It was really kind of a cool, it was a cool moment. So,
well, I mean, it was a nice little homage to the song, the Peter Pan song from the Disney movie. All it takes is faith and trust. And something I forgot. Oh, pixie dust.
Yep.
Think of a wonderful thought. Mm-hmm. Any happy little thought.
Yep.
Which I thought it was really fun that he says, look, we're getting a head start. We're going to go running. What are you talking about? And it just, he knew he had to get away.
Right.
Because his moms were coming. So he had to go probably find them.
Yep. So the Rumpel's doll, I kind of initially had an idea that it was Rumpel's.
Well, let's back up from the doll. The scene in the woods was the scene we saw between Rumpel and Felix. That was the scene we saw at D23.
Yep.
That changed everything for us.
Yep.
From the minute he sat down the log and said, come out from where you're hiding, come talk to me, basically. That's very childlike. Come out wherever you are.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's a child's game. Secondly, he goes Rumpelstiltskin, and he did his little, and he did it sarcastically, the little flourish that he usually does. He had a very sarcastic look on his face. Love that. Robert Carlyle plays that to perfection. And then the conversation between the two of them was very, very much, very childlike, actually, from Felix's perspective. And it was, you know, all right, you're welcome to do anything you want. Oh, but here's the caveat.
Right. The
It's kind of that whole mentality of boys and girls when they play, little boys and girls when they play. Are you my friend? If you're not my friend, then.
Right. So it.
But the doll. Back to the doll.
Right, the doll. You think it was.
Stop. Go to your theory first.
I think it was Rumpel's doll. I think he may have made it and gave it to Pan as a friend or something like that. And maybe looking at that, he remembered a happy moment, and maybe that clouded his thought to kill Pan or something like that, or face him. So there's a lot of Star Wars in there, facing your fear and facing the enemy and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, your thoughts on that.
Well, my thought was, and I do like your thought. I think it's an interesting thought. You know, Rumpel obviously knows Peter Pan somehow, some way. We don't know how. So I know that, you know, back when we saw this at D23, we started noodling, and your theory at the time that you came up with, I still think is a pretty good theory, is that, you know, Rumpel had spent some time there. Was he there as a boy, you know, before? I mean, we don't know. But when I realized what was going on and I saw the whole episode, what made me realize from what I saw and my theory is that was actually Bay's doll. Bay made that doll, and he made the doll while he was there, because remember, he was stuck there.
Yeah.
And there's something about that doll, and maybe it's there's something about that jacket. The doll's wearing the blue jacket. Something about that just makes me think that Rumpel knows that that's Bay's doll. And he knows that Bay was there.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He also may know that Bay was there because he can see the future and stuff. So he may have known that at one point.
Right.
But my point is that the whole reason why Felix did that, that's such a taunting thing. That's a your mama kind of a thing, in a way, without being upfront and saying your mama. That's a psychological your mama. Because if it is, in fact, Bay's doll that Bay made, Felix giving that to Rumpel was kind of like a dig going, yeah, we know your kid's dead because we know that Tamara and Greg killed him.
Mm.
And so what he had said earlier was, you're not going to survive. If you're here for the boy, you're not going to survive. And he's like, let's just say I already know I'm not going to. Which, again, if you think in terms of games, and this is where I kind of wanted to go with this, because, well, actually, we're leading into the next scene, right? The last scene.
Mm-hmm.
That whole exchange between Felix and Rumpel, that was, again, a psychological dig, because he even dug even further and said, isn't it amazing how things we haven't thought about in years can still make us cry?
Mm-hmm.
That in and of itself, I still think somehow that's a dig at him, because Bay was there. Right.
Right.
So, and then the last scene we saw was, do anything between that and the last scene? Okay. Then go to the next scene and we'll talk about the last scene in a minute.
Okay. That's another thing is, the writers, when they really want you to kind of focus on something, they will talk it out.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like the characters are kind of in the writer's room. So, you know, when they started to discuss, okay, you know, we need belief, you know, and we cannot believe in whatever, but we need to believe in each other. And then, you know, I think Regina's eyes rolled and it was like, I don't know about that. You know, and she said, you know, we all have pasts. We all have history. We all have all this stuff. But, you know, we can't be friends, but can we be cooperative people?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then she started to kind of lay it out, you know, the savior. And I think even Regina said, well, okay, savior, what are we going to do? And so, and Emma kind of the pirate, the villain,
the princess,
So his identity, kind of like what we talked about in the beginning with I'm not a mother. she is a mother. And I think as she embraces that, I mean, it almost goes right back to season one, mm-hmm. where Henry said, you know, you're this and you're that and you're that. No one believed him. No one would listen to him. Right. Even Emma wouldn't.
Right.
You know, and so this discussion about who each person is, say, listen, we need to work together. We need to believe in each other. And it's basically we need to validate who we really are. And I think that's season three.
Yeah.
Who they really are. Right. You know, and it's just, you know, Hook is, you know, a suave, dashing pirate. Mm-hmm. You know, who is he really, though? Rumpelstiltskin. You know, he's this dark one. But who is he really? Mm-hmm. You know, is he a coward? Is he more than that? Regina, she wrestled with, I'm not an evil queen. Who is she really? Emma, I'm not a savior. Who is she really? You know, all these different characters. Who are they really? I think that's what season three is all about. And, you know, I still kind of say that this may be Rumpelstiltskin's redemption. Heck, it could be everyone's redemption. Mm-hmm. All of them.
Right.
Because they've all done things that they regret. Mm-hmm. They've all said things. They've all done things. So,
One of the things that was brought up when you just said that was, you know, the villain, the princess, the pirate, you know, the savior. The fact that she is the word villain. I mean, we saw a snippet of a conversation between Regina and Hook earlier in the episode.
Yep,
and she even said, mm-hmm. you know, Greg said something very interesting to me that
villains don't get happy endings.
Do you believe that to be true? And he says, oh, I don't know. Otherwise, we wasted our whole lives. Mm-hmm. So he considers himself to be a villain, which I think is interesting.
Who's trying to change?
He's trying desperately to do something worth, and he is trying to get a happy ending. But again, you know, he's seeing that there's a different way than what he was going for. I don't know. But the fact is, Emma, you know, when she said that to all of them, she says, look, you're going to have to face facts. I'm your leader, and you're going to have to do what I say, and you're going to have to work together. So it's going to be a very interesting dynamic. You know, she at the beginning, Rumpel, you know, you're not going to go get him. I'm going to be the one to go get him. And then he breaks off away from the group, and then she becomes the de facto leader, which is ironic because she's like the youngest of them all.
Right.
And, you know, they each in their own way. I mean, technically, if you look at it, Regina, by virtue of being the queen, she should be in charge. But then, you know, Hook is a captain of a ship. So, I mean, you know, and then, you know, prince and princess, you know, who it's funny.
But they all will be in charge throughout the season. You watch.
I think they probably will. Yeah. I think they'll take charge. Right. But I think that the nice thing is, I think, and I hope, that we'll see that they will actually rely on each other. Mm-hmm. And we've already seen that they can work together for the common good.
Right.
So what is it going to take for them to remain in that same cohesive, you know, mix? I have a feeling there's going to be some little bumps along the road.
Well, sure. And we already saw that once with Emma jumped off the boat. They all worked together to get her out.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
The bickering stopped, the slugging sure. stopped. The brawl on the ship stopped, mm-hmm. and they got her out. Okay, so Pan said it's easier to hate than believe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, it's one of those. I kind of see where I see a group that does that. You know, it's interesting to kind of hear these things and think about. You know, because I think some of what they write is a social commentary.
Sure.
And, but let's talk about that final scene.
Well, I was going to say the final scene for what I saw, especially as he goes, you know, he explains to Henry, you know, I had to find the heart of the truest believer. And when you took the pixie dust and you believed and made it work, I knew you were the one. So, then he said, okay, come on, you know. And then they all surrounded him. Let's play.
Right.
So I started thinking about it. I went, okay, Peter Pan. Peter Pan is the boy who never grew up. Peter Pan is in Neverland, and everything is a game to him.
Yep.
So if everything is a game, because that's what boys do is they play games. If everything is a game, how destructive, how evil, how malicious is he? I mean, you think about it. Boys play games. Boys play war. Boys play dodgeball. Boys play hide and go seek. So there are elements of, I think, all of that coming into play here.
Mm-hmm.
And they're good at it because that's what boys are good at. So in order for the you know, the Fab Five plus Rumple to really win at this, they're going to have to think like kids and they're going to have to play like kids. And it's, I think that's going to be the struggle, is they're going to be thinking like adults and out trying to out-logic these kids. And these are kids. I mean, granted, they're teenagers, but they're kids. And they haven't, you know... They haven't had the adult supervision that they need. So is it, are we going to see a really dark and twisty and violent, you know, I mean, yeah, I think we're seeing a little bit of that element. But again, if you think about the games that kids play, is this really that much more dark and twisty?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
We haven't seen them actually kill anybody yet.
No.
We'll see what happens with that.
Yeah.
I mean, he took a soul. The shadow thing took a soul. And what's that shadow thing? Again, is that Peter Pan? Is that something else? We don't even know.
Yeah. And, you know, is Felix Peter Pan shape-shifting? I don't know. That's another good question.
It didn't seem like there's a lot of magic on the island other than, like, the pixie dust. So it doesn't seem like he has any magic. We'll see. It just seems like there's all this, again, belief... It reminds me of Hook, the movie Hook.
Yep.
The scene where they're sitting down at the table and they bring out the dishes and they're totally empty.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, and he's watching these kids pretend to eat. And he's like, look at them like they're nuts. And then he starts believing and then all of a sudden the food materializes.
Yep.
So I'm wondering how much of that we're going to see here. I mean, in a sense, Henry taking that jar of whatever it was, which he says is pixie dust, and it probably was pixie dust, and then making them fly.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So again, how much of that is going to be required here, and how much it's going to be actually real, and how much it is really going to still be make believe, and it's going to be that question of can you sustain that make believe?
Yes. We're off to a great start, season three. So many great things, so many great themes, so many great characters, and we have just begun.
Yep.
So thank you so much for listening to this podcast, however you found us. If you're new, welcome. Mm-hmm. If you're old, welcome back. And
if you're just a former listener, welcome back to
Yeah.
Sorry, that was a bad joke.
Please spread the word, retweet our tweets. We really appreciate that. And if you don't follow us on Twitter, please do. And that's it. I'm going to let Quartermaster Juan Forth do the rest of the talking. I want to send big love out to all of you.
Mm-hmm.
And off to a great season three. So thank you so much for listening. And we'll be talking at you later on this week.
Thank ye for joining us for the Once Upon a Time Fan Podcast. This be a Roni's Own Media production. We want to hear from you. Our website be onceuponatimepodcast.com. Our email be feedback@onceuponatimepodcast.com. Our voicemail line be 657-333-0626. So let us know what you thought of tonight's episode. And keep a ruddy eye for our main show coming in a few days. So tell other oncers that this be the place to be. Until we sail again, big love to you all, and we'll see ye later. With the good eye, of course.